Welcome to the Healthy Body Podcast. My name is Brianna Wilkerson and I am your host. I'm a holistic health and life coach, essential oils advocate, and a CrossFit Level 1 trainer. But most of all, I am a woman on a mission to get a healthy body that I love and I'm proud of and help women do the same. Because ladies, guess what? For far too long have we fallen victim to this dieting cycle that promises us short-term gain with no long-term results. But I'm here to say that if you are on it, also would love to overcome yo-yo dieting, honor your body, and get a healthy body you love and you're proud of, I'm here to do it with you. Through establishing simple habits in your nutrition and nourishment, your exercise through movement, your stress management through relaxing, sleep through resting, digestion through processing, toxic load through cleansing, and rewriting your mindset and beliefs through appropriate mindset and habits, we can journey together to help you move from a place of shame to a place of honor with your body and get a healthy body you love and you're proud of. So through this podcast, through my Healthy Body Resource Library, my challenge, my private community, and my coaching courses and programs, I help women do that. I help women really come to a place where they love and honor their body in a healthy, sustainable way. So I'm so glad you're here. I'm so glad you landed on this podcast. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe. And be sure to let me know what you think, because this podcast is all about you. All right, so before we get on to the next podcast episode, listen to today's sponsor. This episode of the Healthy Body Podcast is sponsored by my free 7-day Healthy Body Challenge. Through this go at your own pace challenge, you will learn simple tips in how to manage your cravings, lose weight and manage your weight more effectively, and get a healthy body you love and you feel good in. You'll learn tips in your nutrition, exercise, stress, sleep, digestion, toxic load, and mindset and habits. So go to madewell345.com/healthybodychallenge. madewell345.com/healthybodychallenge and get all the details there. All right, now it is time for today's episode. All right, everyone, welcome back to the Healthy Body Podcast. My name is Brianna Wilkerson, and today I have a guest I'm really excited about, Lisa Henderson-Jack, and just her work around fertility awareness, because now after reading her books and using her charting workbook, I feel like I'm more aware than ever. So I just think as we continue this conversation around hormones, I think, you know, shifting it to talk about women and fertility and their menstrual cycle, it could be one of the most empowering gifts that we can give you here. So I'm just so excited. So thank you so much for joining us, Lisa.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yes, I'm honored. I'm like, oh, I feel like I've been following you on social, been posting in your group. And I'm like, oh, I'm talking to her. So this is so great. And so I just want to start off with just you kind of sharing who you are, what you do, and then your story around fertility awareness. And you could even, you know, talk to us about what that means, because I'm pretty sure not all of us know. And we'll go from there.
Sure. Well, I'm a fertility awareness educator and holistic reproductive health practitioner, but that basically means that I teach women to chart their cycles, to understand how their cycles work. In our pre-chat, you were mentioning a few things that stood out to you in the book, and one of them was that we're not fertile every single day of our cycle. Mm-hmm. So there's only a small window of fertility in our menstrual cycle, and from a scientific perspective, we're only fertile for 5 days prior to ovulation plus ovulation day. And then when we learn to identify those, it gives us choices. And some women learn that information and they use it to help optimize their chances of conception when they're ready to start trying. And other women use that information and start to learn one of the fertility awareness-based methods. Mm-hmm. So when you're using a method for birth control, you're going to add some buffer periods around that to make sure that you are correctly identifying which days mm-hmm. you can get pregnant. But a lot of women don't know that you can actually avoid pregnancy without hormones if you want to by understanding how your cycle works. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I do, but it goes deeper than that, because once you start tracking your cycles, you start to recognize that there's a connection between your cycles and health. And so when your cycles are not healthy, when there's something going on, when you stop ovulating and having periods, or when your cycles are not falling into the normal parameters, you can actually glean a lot about your overall health. And so for some women who are charting, it's really what they're seeing in their cycles that is kind of that first sign that indicates, okay, you should look into this further. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I have an interesting entrance into this world because I first discovered fertility awareness shortly out of high school. So I was about, 18 or 19 years old when I first discovered fertility awareness and first started charting. And it was really, so it was like first year university. And we say we had a women's center on campus, and they brought these really great, interesting speakers on all topics related to women, women's health, all that kind of stuff. And there was an author that was reading a segment from her book, and she just mentioned that, you could learn how to identify when you're fertile in your cycle by tracking your cervical mucus and your temperature in your cervical position. And she just talked about how those things change around ovulation, and that floored me. And I just couldn't believe it because it went against everything I had learned about the menstrual cycle. And so it was kind of like from then on, I ran to the bookstore, I bought Taking Charge of Your Fertility campus that taught charting, and many of the women in the group were certified educators themselves. So from the start, essentially, I was learning from trained educators, and then I took a training course and became one of them. And I've continued to do this work over the years, through the podcast and now the books and all of that kind of stuff, because even though I've known about this information and been using it actively in my life to avoid pregnancy in my 20s, and when I was ready to start a family, flip the switch and use the information to optimize my chances of conception when I was ready, and it's been almost 20 years of me doing this, your average woman today still has very little idea about her cycle. So even though this knowledge is there and it's been there for so long, we still, as a culture, haven't really made that much headway, which brings us to today.
Yeah, I was sharing with you earlier, it's almost like I'm ashamed to say it, but I'm not, because I just wasn't taught it. Just how much lack of knowledge I really had around my unique body, and even how I looked at my menstrual cycle, treated myself, and it's interesting. I started reading your book in the season of traveling a lot overseas, where there was like shift in time zones. And I remember something you said was like, okay, hey, if there's a shift in like anything, like, stress, sleep, definitely time zones, it's like it's going to show up in your body and your period. And I just remember the period following that being, probably heavier than normal and just feeling different. I'm like, oh, wow, this is why. Like, it's not just, basically how I treat my body, how I eat, because I wasn't eating as well, being overseas. I just felt so empowered for the first time that my body in this menstrual cycle really was telling me something, as you talk about it, the fifth vital sign. So tell us a little bit about what you talk about in the fifth vital sign. Like, why is the menstrual cycle considered a fifth vital sign?
What's interesting about the menstrual cycle and why I refer to it as a vital sign, and just, this is an idea that is out there, and so it's becoming more recognized by health professionals, and I'm certainly not the first person to say it, but essentially we can consider the menstrual cycle a vital sign because if you have some sort of health issue or something like that, it actually shows up in your chart in different ways, and it can affect your menstrual cycle directly or indirectly. And so a good example of it is just to think about some of the vital signs that we're most comfortable with, we're most familiar with. So the most commonly accepted vital signs are your heart rate, your body temperature, your respiratory rate, and your blood pressure. And so all of us have a very clear understanding that if there was something off with your body temperature, if you had a fever, or if your blood pressure was too low or too high, not only does it tell your doctor that there's something wrong in general, it also provides a very specific idea of what it could be, because your doctor's going to know what are the most common reasons for low blood pressure or high blood pressure. So it gives them a very specific way to look at your health and to identify that there's something wrong. And so one of the things about the menstrual cycle is that when I'm referring to the menstrual cycle with regular ovulation as the fifth vital sign for women, it's the whole cycle. So often when I say menstrual cycle, you think period. But we're talking about what happens from the first day of your menstrual cycle, which is day one of your actual period, all the way through. So, in a healthy cycle, you have your period for anywhere from 3 to 7 days. And then after your period stops, you would have several days before you start to see your cervical fluid. And then in a healthy cycle, you're going to produce cervical fluid for several days before you ovulate. And so on average, or it's maybe 4 to 5 days, but anywhere from 2 to 7 days of cervical fluid before you ovulate. And so for anyone who doesn't really know, cervical fluid might look like creamy white hand lotion, and it might also look like clear, stretchy, kind of raw egg whitey type. And some women will just notice that around that time when they're going to the bathroom, when they're wiping themselves, it just feels really slippery. But either way, so you have your period, and then you have a couple days of where your cervical fluid shows up, and then you have like 2 to 7 days of this fluid, and then you ovulate, right? So it leads to ovulation. And then you would have your period about 12 to 14 days later. So when we look at the whole cycle, then if there is an issue with your period, if it's too heavy, if it's too light, if you're bleeding all the time versus just bleeding in your period, are you ovulating? You know, are you seeing cervical fluid? Do you have it when you're supposed to? Or do you have it all the time? Or do you never have it? And are you ovulating? When are you ovulating? A healthy cycle can range in length. We're often told that it has to be 28 days to be normal. But a healthy cycle can range from, say, 24 days in length up to 35 days. Once we start getting in that 35-day range, if it's 35 and over regularly, then we'd want to look at that. And then also, you know, does your period come about 2 weeks after ovulation, or is that period too short or too long? So even just when I break it down in just that brief moment, you can start to see, okay, there's a lot more going on here than just the period. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of specific areas that we could look at. And for someone who is trained in understanding the menstrual cycle and how it relates to health, then you can gather information about your health. Like, if this is happening in your cycle, this is where you need to look, those types of things, in the same way you would with the other vital signs.
Right. So what are some examples then of like saying something going wrong in the menstrual cycle and you being able to look at someone's chart and say, hey, are you experiencing this? Because I know in the book you mentioned how with your thyroid, I think it was you, and just like you were able to kind of, someone was able to look at your charts and be like, hey, do you have thyroid issue? And you're like, what?
Yeah.
How would you know that, you know? So is that, that's one example, but are there any other examples that where you can look at your client's charts and say, hey, you might have this health issue going on?
Well, yeah, I mean, I'll share with the listeners. So when I first started my charting journey, at first it was just about birth control. I needed birth control. I had been on the pill for period pain. My periods were painful and heavy since day one, and I was really athletic. So I went to the doctor wanting the pill, and I said like 3 words, and then he was already writing the prescription. When I started having sex, I didn't want to be on the pill because I just had my reservations about it from the start. And because I hadn't been taking it for birth control, I didn't take it at the same time. And I just felt like I'd always be nervous about, like, did I take it at the same time? Blah, blah, blah. Like, I felt like I'd always be really nervous. Anyways, so what was my point? I had a point there. Oh, that's right. So when I first started charting, it was just about birth control. And I thought it was amazing. Like, oh my gosh, I can avoid pregnancy naturally without hormones. And I felt so empowered. And my cycles were really unhealthy. And I didn't know that. They were 45 days long on average. Maybe like 38 on average. So sometimes they'd be 38, sometimes they'd be 45, sometimes they'd be 50 days. And that was really long. But I remember reading something about how cycles can be long or short. And I was like, oh, that's just me. I'm Lisa. And I have long cycles. And I didn't know that there was anything wrong. And one of my charting instructors looked at my chart and she was like, Lisa, your cycles are way too long. And look, your temperatures are way too low. I think you should be screened for thyroid. And that moment kind of changed everything for me, because then I realized that this isn't just about birth control. You can actually, like, the way that your health can show up in your cycle, like, that was pretty profound for me. And it turned out that I did have a subclinical thyroid issue that was addressed only because I was charting, because I wasn't overweight, I wasn't depressed, I wasn't overly lethargic, and I didn't have a lot of outward symptoms. It was just the subtle showing way it showed up on my chart kind of at the beginning stages of this issue. So that is one example of how your health can show up in the cycle. Some basic examples that aren't so kind of dire would be like a yeast infection. Not all women are really, really itchy and have these overtly obvious symptoms when they have like a yeast overgrowth or bacteria overgrowth. So if you're charting your cycles and you know that you should only have really your cervical fluid as you approach ovulation, if you see it every single day, there's some level of kind of creamy stuff or whatever the case is, then for some women, they can actually identify that before it gets to the point that you're itchy. And, you know, also even with cervical dysplasia, which is a word for abnormal cervical cells, which is very common, especially among women who've used hormonal birth control, there's a link between birth control use and abnormal cervical cell development. And so again, there's a subtle way that shows up where instead of having your cervical fluid just around the time of ovulation, you have this kind of wet discharge all the time. And so those are some basic things. And I feel like even that, any woman who's ever had a yeast infection, like having the ability to just know what's supposed to, like understand what's coming out of you, understand that cervical fluid is normal, but also understanding how to differentiate between what's normal and abnormal in terms of your, you know, vaginal secretions. I mean, hello, who doesn't want to know that?
I hopefully it's like my mom isn't listening or something, but who knows? She may be. But like, I, you know, like even for me in these last couple of weeks, just like, you know, it's becoming a habit, like to check for all this sort of stuff. I like go into the bathroom and I'm like, I'm not just going to use the bathroom. I'm like, what's going to happen? Like, and it's just like this empowerment, like this secret time where I'm like, I'm being able to be attuned with my body. And it's just like, this is so cool. It took me 30 years, but this is so cool. You know, it's like a great birthday gift to myself. Know what my body's saying, but, so I love that. So can you tell us then a little bit about, okay, what is fertility awareness and the fertility awareness methods? Like what is that?
Well, yeah, I mean, first of all, there's kind of an umbrella under fertility awareness where there's many different organizations that teach, there's multiple different fertility awareness based methods. So there's different ways to track the information. But basically, fertility awareness is understanding the changes that happen in your cycle. And there's three main fertile signs that are most commonly used to do that. So cervical fluid, which we've talked about a bit, because you produce it as you approach ovulation, and you produce it because as you approach ovulation, your ovaries are producing increasing amounts of estrogen, and the estrogen stimulates your cervical crypts to then make cervical mucus. So when you're monitoring your cervical mucus throughout your cycle, and you're monitoring when you're seeing it and when you're not, and when there's more of it, and when there's, you know, all of that kind of stuff, you're actually getting this indirect measure of your hormones, which you wouldn't necessarily know if you weren't kind of involved in this world. So cervical fluid is one of the central aspects of fertility awareness, because it's your cervical mucus that keeps sperm alive for up to 5 days, shuttles the sperm into your cervical crypts and into your uterus and fallopian tubes. So your cervical mucus actually plays an essential role in getting you pregnant. And I like giving a specific example, because there's a lot of myths that we are told about our cycles. So one of the myths is that if you're trying to get pregnant, you need to have sex on ovulation day. And it almost makes it seem like that's the only day that matters. But when you're trying to get pregnant, for example, you want to have sex when you see your cervical fluid, because Mother Nature is smarter than us. So she created this fluid to extend our fertile window so that you could have sex on Monday when you see your cervical fluid. So you go to the bathroom, you wipe, it's pretty slippery, you look and you see some, you know, clear stretchy stuff, you have sex on Monday. But let's say you don't ovulate until Friday, and then your partner goes away on some business trip or something. So you can have sex on Monday, you know, during your fertile window when you have your cervical fluid, ovulate on Friday, and then get pregnant on Friday because of the sex you had on Monday, because the sperm is still hanging out in there. It's still alive. But the sperm can't survive in your body all the time. It can only survive during your fertile window when you have the mucus. And then outside of the fertile window, your cervix is actually blocked with a mucus plug that prevents sperm from getting in, because Mother Nature is smarter than us. And she knows that if you're not approaching ovulation, we don't need anything in there. It's an internal organ. So we're protected from, you know, viruses and all kinds of stuff, because there's no reason for anything to be in there unless you're actually approaching ovulation, right? So that's cervical mucus. Understanding that is really helpful just as a basic step. And for anyone listening who this is all new, if you're not on hormonal birth control, then you can start just paying attention. Like when you go to the bathroom, you're going to wipe yourself anyway. So you can just start paying attention to how it feels at different times of your cycle. So one of, you know, the second most common fertile sign that we pay attention to is your basal body temperature. And so basically, if you take your temperature every morning before you get out of bed, then if you track it in your charting app or in your paper charts, what you'll find is that before ovulation, your temperatures are a bit lower. And then after ovulation, your temperature rises and stays high until your next cycle, or if you're pregnant, it'll continue to stay high. And so again, the temperature is related to your hormones, because the reason the temperature goes up is because after ovulation, you make progesterone, and progesterone has a thermogenic effect on the body, and raises your temperature. So again, you're getting this indirect measure of what's happening hormonally, but it's very helpful to confirm that you've ovulated. The temperature doesn't help predict ovulation, but it does confirm that you have. And then the third sign is cervical position. So your cervix inside, like the cervix is the base of the uterus. It's what dilates when you have a baby. And the position, texture, tilt, like your cervix in general moves around and it changes position in your fertile window versus when you're not. So you have these three very tangible, very specific ways to identify when you're in your fertile window, when you're not. And then when you want to use the method as birth control, then you have to learn the rules. You have to learn, how to confirm ovulation with your mucus, with your temperature, how to put those signs together and match them up. So it's, and just for anyone who's listening who thinks that this might be like the rhythm method, or I've heard of this before. And so with fertility awareness, modern day fertility awareness based methods, we do have, peer reviewed scientific studies to verify the efficacy of this as a birth control method. And when used correctly, fertility awareness is up to 99.4% effective in preventing pregnancy. When you've trained with someone who in a specific method, that's science-based, and when you're given the specific instructions of how to use the method and how to verify ovulation and, giving yourself a buffer period and all of that. So for a lot of women who can't deal with the hormones, if they had bad side effects on birth control, or if they just don't want to, like some of us are just at the point that we just don't feel comfortable putting hormones in our body, or whatever, like maybe you just want to change, or maybe you just want to learn about your body more. But there's a lot of women who want another option to hormones. And it's really important that we know that there is a valid alternative that is effective when used correctly, like when you take the time to learn how to use it.
Yeah. I mean, I think, knowing about these three signs and three things to track, you're right. It does like take time, and it does take learning about your body and being patient. For me, it's like I'm on, maybe I think my second or third cycle using this, and I'm like, okay, I want to know everything right now. And I'm like, oh, I can't. And so I've been using your Facebook group a lot to be like, hey, like what is going on here? I don't know. Just take giving yourself, time to track these and understand these and know your body in these ways. And so you mentioned a little bit about the pill and hormonal contraceptives, and you talk about that in your book, like the pill and, birth control and like coming off the pill. And what if someone's like, I'm just thinking, if people are listening and they're like, I really didn't know there was another way, and if I want to try this way, fertility awareness method, what would you say to them about the pill and maybe even coming off the pill, or the effects of the pill even?
Well, I mean, that's a big question, because of course I have a lot to say about the pill. So I suppose we can frame this discussion like about the pill. I mean, the pill has a lot of side effects that we're not necessarily told about. And so my aim isn't to say, okay, no one should ever use the pill or anything like that, because I used the pill when I was in high school, as I had mentioned. And at the time, I just didn't know there was another way to manage period pain. I had no idea what else I could do. So that was what I did. And it was helpful at the time. But what I think is most important is, as women, we're given this medication, and a lot of women don't even think of it as a medication. I'm sure that either, like anyone who's been on the pill or knows friends on the pill, like if you've ever been in that situation where you're filling out a medical form and it's like, are you on any medication? A lot of us don't even check the yes box because we don't even consider it medication. And a lot of the side effects are skirted over. And the problem with that is that some of the most common side effects of the pill include depression, low libido, painful sex, nutrient deficiencies. The pill causes a number of nutrient deficiencies, including vitamin B6 and B12 and folate. Some women experience an increased amount of yeast infections. So some women go on the pill and actually start getting yeast infections and then end up in they get the yeast, the doctor gives them an antifungal, and then they get bacterial overgrowth, and then they get an antibacterial, and it just kind of swings back and forth. And often the problem in those types of situations is that we're not told that these are some of the common side effects. So instead of the doctor saying, okay, well, we know that depression is a really common side effect of the pill, why don't we just take you off of it or switch it up for a little bit and see if your symptoms improve? What happens is we end up getting prescribed antidepressants, And teenage girls who are on the pill are much more likely to be prescribed antidepressants. and then similarly, like, we're going to, prescribe antifungals and antibacterials if you start getting yeast infections, and we're not going to say, okay, you know, we know that the pill disrupts bacterial, vaginal microflora. Why don't we just, like, switch it up? Or, you know what I mean? Like, this is the conversation that doesn't take place. And then for women who are at the stage in their lives where we are thinking about babies, so maybe you're not ready to have a baby today, but you know that you're going to want to start having babies in a year or two or three or whatever the case. Again, we're often told that the pill has no effect on fertility. And basically, we're left with the impression that you're going to go off the pill and immediately you're going to get pregnant. And especially because as young women, we are taught that we're fertile every day, which is incorrect. And we're taught that we will get pregnant every time we have sex. So we basically, like, I'll speak for myself. I spent, like, you know, with this information, I was terrified of pregnancy. And I just thought every single day I would, like, if I had sex, I would 100% get pregnant. The challenge is that as we get older, our fertility changes. And the pill does not have any type of permanent effect on fertility. But what the research tells us is that it has a temporary effect. So it suppresses fertility. It has an effect on that. So when you come off the pill, it takes anywhere from 9 to 12 cycles, which would amount to 12 to 18 months for your cycles to fully normalize post-pill. So there's this temporary period of sub-fertility post-pill. And so we're not, when we don't have that information, then what happens is we don't have the opportunity to plan for that. We don't have the opportunity to come off the pill a year or two before, or even three, before we're ready to start trying to conceive, just to let our cycles normalize and our bodies, you know, the nutrients to replenish and just all of the things that need to happen, just so that our body's kind of in a good space before we're ready to conceive. So I suppose that's what I would say about the pill, is that it's really important for us to have informed consent. One of the situations that I've seen a lot is, I mean, if you think about it, when you're on the pill all these years, you're being responsible, you're doing everything you're supposed to be doing. We're waiting for everything to align as women. So we're waiting for the career to align, the relationship, the finances, we're doing all of these things. And when you're ready to start having a baby, it's a very emotional thing. You can go from, oh my gosh, I'm not ready to get pregnant, I don't want a baby, to, okay, I'm ready, I want a baby. You can go from one to the other in one cycle. Mm-hmm. But if it takes your body 12 to 18 months to normalize post-pill, then, like, your mind has switched, but your body has not. And by the time your body's normalizing, so, okay, you get off the pill, you and your partner start trying, it's not happening right off the bat, we all think we're cool. So month one, it's like, okay, I just got off the pill, it's totally fine. But after years of being told that we're going to get pregnant at the drop of the dime, month two comes along and you're already kind of worried. Oh my God, am I infertile? Mm-hmm. So by the time 6 months comes around, you're already at the doctor. 12 months, you're already getting procedures. You've already had a couple IUIs and you're probably on the IVF train. And that is when your body is just finally starting to normalize post-pill. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a lot. That's a mouthful.
No, that's good. I think it's so helpful. Like, I think just even, you know, as I listened to your book first and then read it, because I'm just like, I need to, like, see it physically in my mind. And so even as I remember, I think I was walking around during a lunch hour listening, and I think it was in yours that you said something along the lines of, like, when birth control first came out, even how I think women didn't actually bleed. And then they were like, wait, I'm not bleeding. And so they did something to create a fake period. Like, I think most women think their periods are normalized. And when really actually what's happening, it's not, you're not even ovulating, right? Like, it's, and I'm just like, what, how dare they do this to our body? But hey, like, we just don't know. And no one's educating us around that, as you're saying. And so it totally makes sense that you come off and your body needs to communicate to its mind, like, hey, come on, it's time to ovulate. But it's like, wait, we haven't ovulated in so long. So we just got to get there to get there. And you're right. Like, women come off thinking, I'm ready to get pregnant, but it takes our bodies a while to say, like, I'm not ready to have a baby yet. So you just got to be a little patient. But then there's this emotional and mental frustration that happens. So speaking too about pregnancy, I'm just curious too to hear, you know, women have different stages, you know, what you were talking about in their fertility, like very fertile, then maybe we're pregnant, then we're like approaching menopause, we're in menopause and postmenopause. What role does fertility awareness play in the different stages of our life and cycle and fertility?
Oh, that's a great question. I think it can play a couple of different roles. So, one of the roles that it can play just in general is to help you to understand how your actions and your lifestyle choices and all that kind of stuff can impact your cycles and your health. For any woman who's charted her cycles for a period of time, it's kind of like the tip of the iceberg analogy, where you come for the birth control or you come for the conception. So you come for the very practical aspects of this. So you're doing it for a reason. Very goal-oriented, right? And then you kind of end up going down a rabbit hole and realizing, wow, just kind of like you did, like, oh my goodness, I traveled and I was in a different time zone and I was on a plane and oh look, my ovulation was a bit delayed, or oh look, my period was a little bit different. Oh, I fell off the wagon with my diet. I've been drinking wine like 6 times a day for a week now, or whatever. And then your cycle comes and it's like, wow, this is so different. Or you make some sort of change or whatever. You start exercising 5 days a week because you're really gung-ho about it. And then oh my goodness, look, my periods have changed, or my luteal phase is shorter. Maybe I should pull back a bit. So one of the just general ways that fertility awareness can kind of help you throughout your life is just that you can realize that you actually have some power mm-hmm. and control over what happens in your body. Because we're often given this idea that things just happen to us. You know, if your cycles are irregular, it's just like you're just unlucky. Mm. But that, you can't do anything with that. If you're just unlucky, then you just have to go home and just have weird cycles or go on the pill, because there's nothing you can do about it. But when you start charting and you start to understand that your cycles are connected to your health, it empowers you. So you realize, wow, you know, how I move my body, how I eat, how I sleep, how I take care of myself. And this is especially interesting as you go through the different stages of your life, because I think we all know that you can get away with a lot more when you're in your 20s. So when I was in my 20s and I was in university and I was staying up all night and drinking coffee all the time, and it didn't really have that big of an effect on my energy. Like, I didn't really feel it. Like, if I was drinking on the weekends or whatever, like, it didn't really, like, I was fine. You know what I mean? Like, it didn't really have an effect. But anybody who's like past 30, 35, you know, almost 40, you start to, like, you can't really destroy your body like you did. Right. In your 20s, like, you realize you can't get away with it anymore in the same way. And so charting your cycles helps to rein that in. Mm-hmm. Because especially for those of, like, because I'm mid-30s right now, and it's really different. If I were to stay up every night for a couple of days or whatever, which has happened because I'm an author and I right. have gone through the book launch process, I really have to, like, I can see how it affects me. I can see how it affects my cycles. And charting for me personally has always helped me. It has prevented me from going off the deep end. Mm-hmm. Like, I might take a couple of days where I kind of don't follow my normal practices, but I really notice those differences and it keeps me on track. So just in the general sense, charting helps to connect you with your cycles and how your cycles are connected to your health. And it can empower you so that you know, wow, if I don't sleep, if I eat crap all the time, if I don't take care of myself, blah, 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 it actually affects my cycles and my body and my health and how I feel. But I would say beyond that, for women who are charting their cycles and they actually use it as birth control throughout their lives, you're in a way preserving your fertility. The pill is not a vitamin. It doesn't do good for your body. You know what I mean? Like, the way it's presented is that it's benign, but even you mentioned, you know, how in the book I talk about the origins of the pill, and it's super right. interesting. But what was really interesting is, like, the first iteration, so kind of like the beta test, the beta version of the pill, when they gave it to the women. So, okay, let's keep in mind that this was in the 1950s.
Right.
So the first pill came on the market in 1960. So when they were testing the pill, we're talking late 1950s here. And before that point, there was no precedent for this. None of these women had, it was like, if you weren't menstruating, you were either sick, pregnant, or breastfeeding. Mm-hmm. Like, that's it. And so at that stage, women were very clear of the fact that they should be getting a period every month, right? And so when they gave them the pill and they stopped menstruating, they, like, some of these women had been trying to get pregnant, and so they were trying to do this to kickstart their cycles for some of the women. So some of the women actually thought they were pregnant and were happy about that because they had been trying. And the doctors couldn't, they had a really hard time convincing them, no, you're not pregnant. This is the pill doing this. This is like the drug we gave you. And so then when they finally figured it out, they were like devastated, like, oh my gosh. And you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. I'm not pregnant. This is horrible. So, you know, they did that when they changed the formulation, what they did is they give you the synthetic hormone and then they withdraw it so that you have a bleed, but it's not a period, because in order to have a period, you have to ovulate. And so then the women, like, they never really told them what was going on, right? They, like, in so many words, they basically presented it as, you get to keep having periods, but now you just won't get pregnant. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it, even from back then, we weren't really educated about what's going on, what's happening with our bodies, how this thing is working, and how it could affect your future fertility, right? So in terms of just the application, like, it was never intended to improve health. And one of the interesting things about the pill is that it was the first drug that was ever given to healthy people that would disrupt a natural process. So you're basically shutting down the normal process of ovulation and menstruation in a healthy person. And that was kind of like, we do that now, right? Like, where we have all the drugs now, but it was the first drug given to healthy people when they didn't have a problem to shut down a healthy process. So the pill is not, like, regardless of everyone's personal opinions of it, we should know, like, it's not a health thing. It's not actually helping you be healthier. It's shutting down a normal and healthy process in the body. And so by using fertility awareness or just using non-hormonal methods of birth control, or even just understanding that and so one of the things that I always say is, like, when women learn about the side effects of the pill, they're going to fall into one of three categories. So some women are going to be like, whoa, that's a lot of hormones and I'm not comfortable with that. And so they'll kind of avoid it. Some women will say, well, I'm so glad I know, you know, thank you. I'm still going to use it, but maybe I modify my use. So, like, maybe some of us would have used it in our 20s when things were crazy. But then once we kind of get past that crazy stage and we get more into the stable stage of life or whatever, you might actually switch to something different just because you knew. So some of us wouldn't use it for as long. And then other women would use it for just as long and be like, I'm glad I know the side effects, but I'm going to use this because this is the method that's appropriate for me. But by not using it and knowing that you have an option not to use it, it kind of gives you the ability just to preserve your natural hormones, your endocrine function, benefit from your natural hormones, estrogen and progesterone, which you're not producing in significant quantities when you're on these hormones. And the pill is not without risk. It does increase your risk of liver cancer and breast cancer and cervical cancer. So it's also important just to know that.
Yeah, I agree. Like, and I definitely recommend if this interests anyone, to make sure to check out Lisa's two books, The Fifth Vital Sign and then her Fertility Awareness Mastery book that really explains this all in detail. So before we talk a little bit about that book, I just have one more question around, like, kind of going along with this, you know, women, we will go through different stages. And I think, you know, maybe people might approach fertility awareness like, okay, I'm ready to get pregnant. But what are the benefits of charting too, like, in all your stages of your fertility? Like, what can, I know you were saying generally, but what, well, the benefits you shared, maybe, like, what can change even? So when you're pregnant, it's like, should you still chart? And if so, what should you look for? Like, when you're approaching menopause, like, you know, I was just curious about that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think in general, charting helps you to achieve what's called, like, body literacy. Mm-hmm. And body literacy is just a term that refers to having that understanding of your menstrual cycle, how it works, and how it relates to your health. Mm-hmm. And it can't really be understated how just this basic kind of understanding of your body, like, if you understand even just your cycle, if you understand that at certain times of your cycle, you often feel a bit more tired and a bit more withdrawn or a little bit more introverted. So I know for myself and for many women, during the late luteal phase, so the premenstrual phase, the week or so before you have your period, some of us tend to feel a little bit more introverted, have a little bit less energy. And then many of us around ovulation feel a little bit more energetic and wanting to, and also just in general, more extroverted and things like that. Like every woman isn't the same, but charting allows you to actually put the pieces together. A lot of us have had those experiences where there's certain times when we feel a certain way and there's other times when we feel a different way, but we don't know that it could actually be related to where we are in our cycles. Right. And having that knowledge, I mean, everyone's favorite term is like hack this, hack that, and blah, 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 blah. Like you can hack your cycles then. I included a quote from Gloria Steinem for her essay, like, If Men Could Menstruate. So anyone who's interested, Google it. It's pretty awesome. But if men could menstruate, if men had periods, it would be the thing. And men would be talking about how to hack their cycles and how to, you know, optimize their workout routine based on their, like, it would just be this whole thing, right? It would just be this ridiculous, hyper-masculine way to, like, optimize everything based on where we are in our cycle. But as women, it's really helpful. You know, I know that, you know, I mean, sometimes it is what it is. Like I end up doing events on day one of my cycle sometimes, which is not what I want. But ultimately, as I've gotten older, I can arrange my work and my schedule and things like that in such a way that, you know, if I know that I tend to be a bit more tired a couple, like maybe a day or two before my period comes. And the first day of my period, you know, I tend just to want to relax and just chill out. And so I can kind of arrange some of my work responsibilities and my parenting responsibilities around that. And just that is empowering in our own lives. Those things make a big difference just on your day-to-day life. And also having the ability to know, okay, if I eat certain foods, I feel this way, or if I, you know, exercise this way, or, you know, I just feel like those, it can't be understated how much that can have an impact in your life. Over the years of working with women one-on-one, that's kind of one of the things that they appreciate the most, because they understand themselves better, their bodies better, their cycles are no longer a mystery, and they feel in control and empowered. Mm-hmm. And then if you chart, then when you go to your doctor, so if you've been charting for several years and then all of a sudden something is off, and you're seeing, let's say, whatever it is, like whether it's your energy, whether your cycles are off, whatever, you have all this data. You're like, look, I know my body and my, you know, I usually feel this way, but something has changed and now I'm having these specific symptoms. And this is when they started. Because when you write stuff down, you actually can do that and you can say, okay, so it was in October and it was mid-October and this is when I started having these symptoms. I mean, this kind of stuff can help early detection of, like I said, I talked about cervical dysplasia, but like there's all these things that health-wise that can, you also asked a question about, pregnancy and if you should chart while pregnant. And so my recommendation is to not chart during pregnancy. But the reason for that, so if you are charting your cycles, and let's say you're taking your temperatures and watching your cervical fluid, and you can confirm ovulation with your charts, a positive pregnancy test, like air quotes, from charting would be 18 temperatures in a row that are higher than your pre-ovulatory temps. And so once you hit that 18 high temps and you've peed on a stick and it's positive and you get your blood test from your doctor, charting, in my opinion, can just cause additional stress. Mm-hmm. That's from what I've seen. Because it is actually possible for you to, in some cases, not in every case, but in some cases, to see if a miscarriage, like a very early one, could be happening. Like in a regular run-of-the-mill pregnancy chart, mm-hmm. your temperatures would stay high. They don't just keep rising because you're not like 1,000 degrees by the time you have your baby, but they do stay high. And so I've seen charts before where, you know, the temperature dips. And anyone who charts their cycle, anyone who's listening who charts, you'll notice that, like, when you're charting your cycle, when you're not pregnant, basically like the day of or the day before your period, your temperature will dip down in a lot of cases. Not every time, but a lot of times the temperature just is high. You know, you ovulate, the temperature rises and it stays high for your 12 to 14 days. But then like the day before your period or the day of your period, the temperature drops. Because again, it's hormones. Progesterone drops before your period comes. So it's literally showing you what your hormones are doing. So if you are having like an early miscarriage, it's possible for the temperature to drop and that and stay down, and that could indicate, or just not go up, and that can kind of indicate something. So, okay, that's a big mouthful, but what I'm saying is that for women who are charting and are pregnant, anytime the temperature goes down like 1 point and up again, and like, you know what I mean? Anytime there's any change and any shift, you're going to freak out because you're going to think I'm miscarrying. So yeah. I would say like, no, mm-hmm. but you can, one of the things, like, you can still pay attention to how you feel. You could have a little journal and like, I felt tired today, or like, you can still like pay attention to your signs and write them down. But I would say stop charting. Don't look at your cervical mucus. Just don't take your temperature. Just live your life after you've gotten pregnant until the baby comes or until the pregnancy ends, and then you start charting again.
Mm, yeah, that's good. Yeah, because I think I remember that now in the book too. Just like, that might not be helpful. And then just last thing too, just say, I know I have some women that I work with who listen to the podcast who are probably approaching the menopause stage or in it. You know, what would you suggest, just everything you've talked about, all the work you do, what would be the next step for them in particular?
Mm-hmm. Well, charting and menopause, well, so first of all, menopause is a word for the last period. Mm-hmm. So just like menarche is the first period, menopause is the last one. So it's this, like, that's it. And so often what we're thinking about is the pre-menopause period. And so during about the 10-year period before you stop having periods, we would often notice certain changes. So it can really vary. For women who are charting their cycles, then they have an ability to track it. And over the years, if you've charted your cycles, you'll understand that there is always some variation. No woman is a machine. Mm-hmm. And even women with air quotes, really regular cycles, right. I have never seen in my life, and I've seen thousands of charts over the years, it just doesn't exist. There's no woman alive who, like, from menarche, like their first period, has 28 day cycles all the time. Like, that's not a real thing. There's research that has been done where they monitor the length of women's cycles over time. And so statistically, you know, the first 5 years post, like after you've started having your periods, the cycles range a bit more, on average 45 days, and they'd be longer while they regulate. Just like your breasts have to take years to normalize, your cycle takes years to normalize too. And then you have a fairly stable stage, you know, after your cycles have matured, you know, until you get to that 10-year before menopause. And then at that period of time, then your cycles may fluctuate a bit more. So some women will have fairly consistent cycles until like the last 2 years before they stop having periods, and then they'll get longer. Some women will have cycles that shorten, so they start having shorter cycles, and then they eventually get longer until you stop having periods. And they usually say if you haven't had a period for a year, that's menopause. So it, that's like the last one. But during that time, charting your cycles can be very helpful for the practical reasons. So when you chart your cycles, you can't predict ovulation because ovulation varies. The first half of the cycle is the most variable. If you're traveling, if you experience stress, et cetera, ovulation is very sensitive to that and can be delayed. But when you're charting, so in those premenopause years, when you do have those cycle fluctuations, you have a way of knowing when your period is coming, because after you ovulate, the period comes 12 to 14 days after. So if you happen to start ovulating a bit earlier, you're not caught off guard by your period and having those embarrassing moments. It's a very practical thing. As women, we want to know when we're ovulating. A lot of women gravitate to the pill because they want to know when they're having their period and they don't want to be caught off guard. So a very practical thing is that when you chart, you know when your period is coming, and your period doesn't never surprise you. Like, you know when it's coming. But also, you can apply the same kind of that vital sign principle or vital sign idea that if your cycles are off, it means your health is off. So the premenopause period, we're not supposed to go through like an unrelenting, emotional, crazy, like everything, you know what I mean? Like, we're kind of given this idea similar to the period, like the period's a curse and it's normal for it to be painful and blah, blah, blah. We can expect it to be horrible. We're kind of given that same story about the premenopause period. But in the same way that if your periods are horrible, it's a sign that there's something deeper that we should be looking at. It's the same idea. So when you're charting your cycles, then you can, and if you're aware of that, you can kind of track how you feel. As women too, like I mentioned already, as we get older, we can't get away with all the stuff we used to get away with. And sometimes menopause is that, or the premenopause period, that's like your body like slamming at the door, trying to get your attention. Like, look, you need to start sleeping. You need to start eating better. You need to start. So if you kind of follow all of those basic principles, to improve the health of your cycles, support your hormonal health, do all of those things, it can help you to have a better experience of that premenopause period.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really great, because I think you're right. Like, I just feel like my temptation might be to like, okay, I'm going to use this for when I want to get pregnant or not get pregnant or whatever. But seeing that, that this is a lifelong thing where you can just continue to approach the whole part of your menstrual cycle from a place of like, your body is trying to tell you something, and it's just, how do we honor and care for our bodies? Okay, well, let's look at our menstrual cycle. So I love that you just explained that no matter what stage you're at, it can tell you something. So tell us then, as we wrap up, about, you know, your books, your programs. Like, okay, so people have listened. Now they're like, okay, I want to learn more. I want to get started. Where do I go? What do I do?
Well, thank you for that. I mean, my book, The Fifth Vital Sign, Master Your Cycles and Optimize Your Fertility, I wrote that book so that I could kind of put a lot of this information in one place. It has over 1,000 research citations because I wanted to connect women with the knowledge and the data. Often we're just told information and it's like, oh, just take my word for it because I'm really smart or whatever, or because I have a degree or whatever it is. But as women, one of the main issues that I see is that we haven't been given access to this information. It may come as a surprise that, so for instance, the conversation we had about the pill and the different side effects, or the conversation that we had about cervical mucus and how it relates to our fertility, or fertility awareness in general, this information is based on, you know, research and science, and there's a ton of research that has gone on in the background. And there's this issue for anyone, I mean, a lot of people know that it takes a long time for the most current research to go into medical practice, but they say it takes, you know, an average of 20 years. So that means that in your doctor's office, some of the current practices that are being used are based on, you know, research and evidence 20 years ago. So there's a part of the whole thing is to connect women with the information, so you know where it's coming from. And you have the opportunity then to look into it further. If you see something that you're interested in, you actually know where the data comes from because you can look at the citations yourself and, you know, explore it further so that you can deepen your understanding in it, of it. So The Fifth Vital Sign is available on Amazon in ebook, paperback, audiobook format. You can head over to thefifthvitalsignbook.com and you can actually read the first chapter for free. And I just recently released the Fertility Awareness Mastery Charting Workbook. So this is for the ladies who, actually when I started working in this field, and especially now with all the charting apps and all the electronic options, I actually really didn't believe that women would even want a paper chart. Like, I kind of thought, oh, this is over, because I created a paper chart back in my 20s. And then as I worked with women, yeah, a lot of them chose the charts. Like, I give my clients the option of whether they want to use one of the charting apps that we use together or the paper, and a lot of them use paper. So yeah. I created the charting workbook because I'm like, well, I guess we still want paper, but I have always charted on paper. And any woman who's kind of like, you know, likes that journal, like likes to have that information. And so you can, that's also on the website, thefifthvitalsignbook.com. You can see the workbook information there. And if this conversation has been really interesting to you and you want to learn more about fertility awareness, there's like 275 podcast episodes. Yeah, so you can, whatever your favorite podcast player is, just search Fertility Friday and I will come up. So lots of great information to, you know, get you all, you know, up to date with fertility awareness.
So great. And if people wanted to kind of even just check out your website, I know you have a free series too around the three, you know, vital things to look at, as well as Instagram or Facebook. Where could they find you in all of those?
Well, thank you for that. If you head over to fertilityfriday.com/freebies, then it's a list of all of the free resources I have. And that includes my 3-part video series. So for anyone who's new to fertility awareness and wants a good rundown of the 3 main fertile signs, that's really good. Instagram, I'm you know, I tend to post inflammatory statements, it seems, over there. So it's pretty fun. So at Fertility Friday, you'll find me. And then, you know, I'm on Facebook and all those different places. So, yeah, thank you so much for having me here. It's really been my pleasure.
Well, it's been, trust me, I mean, I didn't know if I could learn more, and I, now I have. Like, and then I've got to go reread the book. And so, I mean, I just think it shows after 20 years of really you're doing this yourself and leading women through it, like you are like an expert in it. And of course, there's so much to learn, but like, and even what we were having in our pre-chat too, just you have a heart for this. And we, you know, now you're learning about like men and their sperm and optimal health being a part of the conversation even more. And so I definitely recommend anyone listening, if this interests you at all, please check out the links in the show notes, because you have a lot to learn from Lisa. Like, I'm rereading her book for peace sake. Come on, there's just so many good, I was like listening to it. I was like, there's no way I'm going to remember every single thing. I love it though. I love hearing your voice. I was like, that's why when we met, I was like, I feel like I know you, because you've spoken in my ear for 8 hours. It's great. So I love it. So thank you so much for the work you do. And just thank you for joining us today.
Aw, thanks so much.
That's a wrap. Thank you for listening to another episode of the Healthy Body Podcast. I'm so honored to be with you each time you listen. All right, a couple of things before you go. Please rate and review and subscribe to the podcast. The more people that do that, the more feedback I get, but the more people that can see this podcast. So wherever you're listening to it, subscribe to it there. Second thing is, if you would like to call in and leave a voice message in the form of a question or even your review, feel free to do that through the Anchor app. Just go to my podcast after you download the Anchor app from your app store, go to where it says voice message, and you can leave it there. Third thing is, if you would like to support this podcast and its ongoing, podcast episodes and the guest episodes, well, feel free to do that. There's now an option through the Anchor app that you can do that. You just go to Anchor and click listener support, and there's three different levels that you can support the ongoing work of this podcast. And fourth thing is, stay tuned briefly as I mention again the sponsor of this podcast. Without sponsorships, both sponsors that I do as well as other people do, this podcast would not be possible. All right, tune in for the sponsor, and I'll see you on the next episode. Just a reminder for you, this podcast is sponsored by my free Healthy Body Challenge. This is a challenge that will help guide you through basically everything we talk about in this podcast in my programs. It's a great introduction to figure out how you can go and lose weight effectively, manage your weight appropriately, gain your energy back, and feel good in the body you're in. You're going to learn tips in your nutrition, exercise, stress management, sleep, digestion, and toxic load, and mindset and habits. So just go to madewell345.com/healthybodychallenge, madewell345.com/healthybodychallenge, and you'll get access there. And when you join, check your email, because that's where it's going to go. And then the trainings will be located in my training database, and then you'll get access to my Facebook group where you can unpack it. All right, that's it, and I'll see you on the next episode.